year is 1921 in rural Troy, Ohio. Cadalafa hornworms have been destroying the valuable cadalafa trees whose wood is used for railroad ties, fencing, and telephone poles. Lieutenant John A. McCready is gearing up to perform a flight over Postmaster Harry Carver's grove in a World War I surplus Curtiss JN4 Jenny. However, this isn't just any flight, and this isn't just any Super Jenny that he's flying. This plane has been specially modified to spread lead arsenate over the 6-acre farm in order to hopefully eradicate the larvae. Lieutenant McCready is making history. He gets into the aircraft and prepares for takeoff. If all goes well, he will fly 20 to 35 feet off the ground, the small makeshift metal hopper attached to the plane, releasing the powdered insecticide. He gains air and begins his work, relying on the wind to guide the product safely to the ground. After 5 refills of the hopper, the 6-acre grove has been covered. His feat was successful and accomplished in just minutes what would take ground-based application days. The suggestion of Charles R. Nelly, an Ohio Department of Ag forester, had come to fruition. His idea, after going through entomologist John S. Hauser, found its way to the Army at McCook Field, where a device, the hopper, was constructed by engineer Etienne Dumoy. The hopper could hold 100 pounds of powdered insecticide and was undoubtedly an early success that proved the feasibility of agricultural aviation. Hello and welcome to episode 2 of A Day in Agriculture. Today we're going to be looking into the agricultural aviation industry. We're going to dive into the history of this aviation and explore how it's adapting to the modern age with our guest, Mr. Ryan Gillen. Okay, so what exactly is agricultural aviation? It's using a variety of aircraft, whether this be drones, airplanes, or helicopters, to apply mostly pesticides, known as crop dusting, fertilizers, top dressing, and occasionally seeds for cover crops. If you've ever lived in a mostly rural area, odds are you've seen low-flying airplanes, typically the color yellow, doing exactly this. Agricultural aviation is often associated with the term crop duster. This nickname pays homage to earlier application styles that used powdered chemicals and fertilizer. Now, crop dusters deliver mostly liquid products over acres. The history of these crop dusters begins, as said before, with the flight of Lieutenant McCready in Ohio. Although this flight proved the possibility of aviation and agriculture, it definitely wasn't immediately applied. It just wasn't practical for farmers to purchase a plane, and the attachments needed for crop dusting were not easy to work with or attach. Furthermore, the movement of the United States towards possible entry in World War II during the 30s meant planes were being manufactured mostly for military usage. After the Second World War, however, it was a different ballpark. Surplus planes used in that war were more readily available, and agricultural aviation rapidly expanded. Farmers discovered that crop dusters could do in hours what took on-ground sprayers days. In the early 1950s, the CAA, or the Civil Aeronautics Administration, had listed over 5,000 aircraft as being used for agricultural purposes. These machines were usually modified by the owner for ag usage and were anything from personal aircraft to heavy bombers. These personally adapted aircraft had very high accident rates, however, prompting the CAA in 1949 to seek the development of a safe aircraft specially designed for aerial application of fertilizer, seeds, and chemicals. The CAA then contacted the Texas A&M Aircraft Research Center. Under a $50,000 contract, the college would design the aircraft. Aviation pioneer and engineer Fred Weick worked on and developed the plane. AG-1, as it was called, flew its maiden flight on December 1, 1950. The plane was built with safety in mind and was described as a flying padded cell. This priority, however, paid off, when John P. Jones, a CIA agent, crashed and destroyed the aircraft, walking away unscathed, aside from a bruised thumb. This aircraft, unpatented in all aspects by both the college and the CIA, was to be used by other manufacturers to design other aircraft that would be efficiently operated and managed by the aerial applicators flying them. The rest is history. Agricultural aviation is constantly evolving hand in hand with precision agriculture technologies we talked about in the last episode. Drone technologies are being used as applicators, and aircraft are employed to map and photograph land from above. According to the National Agricultural Aviation Association, there are approximately 3,400 aerial applicators hard at work in the United States. Of these pilots, roughly 87% own their own aerial application businesses. Aerial application is performed in all 50 states and has greatly evolved since the flight of Ag 1 in 1950. It has become increasingly important in not just safely applying pesticides, but also in fighting wildfires. Agricultural aviation has evolved to treat more than 127 million acres annually, seed 3.8 million acres of cover crop annually, and help sequester 1.9 million metric tons of CO2 annually. Aerial applicators have the freedom to run their own businesses with their aircraft and work hard to ensure the crops they fertilize and spray are safe and profitable for commercial usage. Aerial applicators all hold their commercial pilot's license and are registered as commercial pesticide applicators in the states they fly in. Applicators are also committed to reducing chemical drift and creating a safer product and environment around them. This brings us to our guest, Mr. Ryan Gillen. Mr. Gillen lives in Elkton, Tennessee with his wife Nikki and two sons. He was raised in West Tennessee and attended Middle Tennessee State University, where he earned an animal science degree with a minor in industrial engineering. He moved to Elkton in 2010 and began working for a local ag retailer. In 2016, his wife and he started Gillen Ag Service, an independent ag retail supplier of Agrigold brand seed corn and soybeans, which also supplies specialty row crop products and foliar fertilizers. In 2018, he began operation on the aerial application side of their business, based in Pulaski, Tennessee. With a passion for agronomy and an addiction to flying, he services the row crop industry throughout Middle Tennessee and North Alabama. So first, to start us off, I want to say thank you so much for taking the time to be our second guest.
Hey, absolutely. Thank you for having me, Jessa.
So first, Mr. Gilland, I know you mentioned gaining a degree in animal science, and then you went on to establish your own ag retailer. Would you mind giving us a brief history of how you got involved in agricultural aviation from this and kind of your steps to get there?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I got out of high school, I ran, there was a program called the Boll Weevil Eradication Foundation. And I guess your father, being a cotton farmer, he remembers the eradication program that went around to eliminate the boll weevil damage in the cotton crop. When I got out of high school, I worked for them running boll weevil traps, and I had the opportunity to get buzzed on more than one occasion from a, you know, at the time it was just a yellow plane to me. I didn't know anything about them. And I would sit on the edge of the fields and watch those guys work, and it just absolutely intrigued the heck out of me, the work that they were doing. So later on, I worked with a vegetation management company. We were spraying pipelines, right-of-ways, pumping stations, that kind of stuff across the south. And when we would get through the Mississippi River Delta, we would run low on water. We'd always kind of look for that yellow airplane in the sky. Sometimes we try to follow them back, and then we'd use that as an opportunity to get water and things like that to keep doing our job that we were doing on the road. So that was where I was first intrigued by the whole process. So it took me many years before I ever took some of the first steps into actually becoming a pilot. But that's where it all kind of started.
Yes, sir. I know I've seen some in the fields and stuff. And my great uncle actually used to be a crop duster. And I find all of that really interesting too. I love watching all the airplanes go over. And my other uncle has his certification, and he doesn't fly for agriculture and stuff, but I still find that side really interesting.
Yes, ma'am, absolutely.
So, after you started your business, how did you take those steps to become certified and become an aviator?
So we started our Gilliland Ag Service, I guess technically back in 2016. We became essentially a dealer for Agrigold brand seed, corn, and soybeans, and we took that opportunity and seed kind of across southern Middle Tennessee and North Alabama, and used that opportunity to get to know a lot of growers throughout the, kind of that service area. Obviously, ag aviation being a long-term dream of mine, it wasn't long that we really had started working towards the commercial aspect of a pilot's license. So I'd worked for a couple of ag retailers locally over the years, and while I'd been doing that, I did work through and get my private pilot's license knocked out. And but it wasn't until I started working on my own where I took the opportunity and actually got my commercial pilot's license. So that was kind of one of the first real steps in making it a reality was that commercial license.
Yes, sir. When I was doing my research, I noticed that you did have to have your commercial license to do it. And honestly, I didn't realize that. I thought you just had to have the private license. But I guess it makes sense since you are a business and you're
Yes,
dealing with
ma'am.
public
So
interests.
the private license only allows you to fly privately. You can't do any type of business with it, whether it's agricultural or flying freight or any flying for compensation requires a commercial pilot's license. So we had to do that. There's also getting into kind of some of the regulatory side of it. Obviously, with us applying pesticides, there is regulation in every state that regulates how, what type of licenses are required. You've got to have a pesticide applicator's license. There's operator's licenses. There's insurance. There's all sorts of different requirements, and every state's just a little bit different. But
Yes, sir. That makes a lot of sense, actually. I don't know what I was thinking with the private license, but it makes sense it would be public. That way, everything's kind of getting protected and overseen. That way, we can make sure that there's good regulations on what's happening over our fields.
yes, ma'am.
So, next question, with your ag business and being a aviator, what would a typical day on the job look like for you?
Oh, goodness. On a day that we're flying, quite often it starts extremely early. So we would get to the airport well before sun up. There's a lot of service, kind of maintenance, checking aircraft over, checking equipment over. If we're going off to work other than where we're based, obviously the crew has got to get there and get set up. So our day quite often starts long before sunup, as most every business within the ag industry does.
Yes, sir.
So really, once we get fired up and get running, it's just repetition. It's, hey, we're working this project, we're working this load off for this grower. Obviously, if we're running dry or liquid, there are differences in the way we operate for both of those. The dry fertilizer and cover crops that we apply is extremely fast-paced. Most of those products, they run off pretty stinking quickly once we get to the field. So depending on how long the ferries are, we can have very quick turns from being on and off the ground nearly all day long.
Yes, sir. That sounds real quick paced.
It absolutely can be.
So you mentioned the different types of products that you're applying with chemicals and pesticides. What would you say you're typically applying on the fields, and what's their importance in their usage?
We do, obviously, we spray a little bit of wheat coming along through this time of year. Not a whole lot of it is sprayed by us in this area. There's some other operators that do a good bit. This is my kind of my seed selling time of the season, so I try to focus on that. But some of the guys, they'll spray herbicide, insecticides, trying to control the pests that are in the field. You know, obviously, we're not out just spraying every acre with everything we've got. That's not very economic for the farmer. So obviously everything we're doing needs to have a return on investment to the grower. So we're very selective in the products that we apply to make sure we're putting the right amounts on the right spot and just doing the best job we can for the grower. Coming into the spring, once the corn crop gets planted, for us locally, we do spread a lot of dry fertilizer on a year outside of 2022. Obviously, last year was extremely dry early on, and that in turn kind of knocked out a lot of that fertilize opportunity that we'd spread in the past. So as the crop kind of matures, we'll end up, the vast majority of our work is going to be corn fungicide work. So we're applying fungicides to the corn crop for health reasons. We're trying to make that plant as healthy as possible. There's diseases that can show up in the plants, and at times we're trying to apply a fungicide that will cure a disease, and at other times we're trying to apply a fungicide that's just merely preventative, you know, and it's kind of like somebody taking a vitamin or you know, we're trying to make the plant healthy at the end of the day. So we can apply foliar fertilizer, insecticides. There are herbicides that apply. I personally don't spray a lot of herbicides. The fields that we work locally, most of them are pretty small. So in turn, the work is not very conducive to herbicide work for myself. So once we get into the fall time of the year, we will do a pretty good bit of cotton defoliant in certain areas, but another large portion of our work is going to be the cover crop throughout kind of our service area. I'm sure you've heard and dealt with a lot of cover crops around, and it's been growing in the last 6, 8, 10 years, and I expect it to continue to grow with the benefits that kind of NRCS has been showing.
Yes, sir. So with all of the growth and kind of the more need for these, what'd you say? With more need for all of the spraying and stuff and keeping everything upkept, would you think that agricultural aviation could see an increase in the coming years?
I believe it will. What that increase looks like, who knows? Again, cover crop programs that are out there and the research that's been done with a lot of it, I expect that part of the industry to grow substantially kind of moving into the future, no doubt. So,
yes, sir. And with all of the different measures that are being taken, I'm sure, to prevent it running off and making sure everything's sustainable for the farmer and producing a good crop, what are some of the different technologies that you've seen come into the industry since maybe you've had experience in it?
Yes, ma'am. Well, obviously, I've not been in the industry just a great period of time as a pilot myself, but I've been around it for nearly in and out and around it for nearly 20 years. So within the industry, there's been a ton of advancements. You know, initially, crop dusters were a lot of repurposed World War II aircraft. They made a lot of transition out of those old aircraft into purpose-built aircraft. Later on, they ended up doing transitions from the old radial engines into turbine engines for just reliability purposes. Kind of of moving forward from that. You know, there was advancements in GPS, and kind of the implementation of that was tremendous help for efficiency for pilots and accuracy in what they were actually doing. You know, there's getting closer to more current times. There's been a lot of work with variable rate fertilizer. Just like the ground rigs are doing, we can write prescription maps and actually variable rate the fertilizer coming out of the aircraft based off the prescription for every field. So the kind of the big buzz right now is with drones. You know, everything drone related seems to be of interest right now, whether they're out doing marketing work for real estate companies to, you know, within the ag sector. They're using drones for doing imaging within a crop, from stand counts to insect and disease pressure and crop scouting. And then they're also trying to use some drones for aerial application work. Now, it looks to me like there's a lot of work that still needs to be done when it comes to advancements on that side. Some issues that really need to be resolved. Some of it comes down to hopper capacity, I guess technically fuel, the battery packs, that they need to work on some of the battery packs. But there's no doubt the direction they're going, that they will be an option for future use for sure. So.
Yes, sir. I know at the Louisville Farm Show, that was one of the big things they had set up. They had a bunch of different just agricultural drones and exhibits on all of the different impacts of the drones and what they're expanding to do. And like you said, I still feel like the technology has a way to come with hopper capacity and such. But I feel like in the upcoming years, we could see a lot more of that on the farms.
I do feel like we will see more of that on farm. How far in the future that is, I really don't know. I would hope that, you know, a lot of the technology we and testing that we do on aircraft, whether it's fixed wing or rotorcraft, the drone industry could utilize some of the same swath. They'll use basically what we call a strain test, and it is applying a product over over essentially a cotton string, and then they'll run that string through a imaging device that picks up on the droplet spectrum as the aircraft has gone across the string, and in turn that gives them an idea of how even the swath is, if there needs to be adjustments made in nozzles. We can add nozzles, remove nozzles, drop nozzles, just to make sure that we're getting a good, even application out of the product. And I hope that the drone industry kind of moves towards some of that as well. I think it would be really useful for them, for sure.
Yes, sir. What would you say is the biggest challenge that agricultural aviation is facing now in modern times?
You know, this industry is, it has a lot of scrutiny. And I think a lot of it is because people are scared of what we do because they don't understand what we're doing, unfortunately. And there's a lot of benefits that agricultural aviation brings to farmers. There is no way in the world that all the ground rigs that we have in the country could cover enough acres, even if you had the ability to get over the top of a corn crop at that height. There's no way they'd be able to cover those acres in that very narrow time window that we have for corn fungicide applications. Just the timeliness of it. You know, we do the best job that we can to protect the crop, to provide food security for the country and for the world. And a lot of folks don't appreciate that, if you know what I mean.
Yes, sir. I know what you mean. There's just so much that goes into creating good crops, good food, and sustainable operations. I feel like a lot of it, the general population doesn't see. And that's a lot of what I'm trying to do with my podcast, just kind of educate about these different careers and their importance so that people know that absolutely. They're there and what they do.
Absolutely. Well, we definitely appreciate what you're doing because it's needed, no doubt.
Thank you. So just to kind of, as a quick wrap-up question, what's your best and most memorable experience on the job for you?
Oh, goodness. Probably that first pay and load. You know, I worked at becoming an aerial applicator kind of on and off for the better part of dreamed about it for many years, but between the dreaming and actually going at it, close to 18 years. So the opportunity for me to crawl in an aircraft and sit out and put out that first pay and load, that was no doubt very memorable for me. So.
Yes, sir. Kind of like everything you've been working towards, the fruit of your labor coming together, and you're getting up in the air and getting to really experience it.
Absolutely. A lot of folks don't have the opportunity to see the earth and the world from a bird's eye view. And I am truly blessed to have that opportunity, especially being able to work in the area that I live in, you know.
Yes, sir. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to be on my podcast, and I've learned a lot.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you for having me, Jessa, and I wish you the best with this podcast. I think it's going to be great moving forward for sure.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Agricultural aviation and aerial application are constantly evolving and crucial to creating sustainable, profitable, and safe foods and products for the world. Through crop dusting, top dressing, seeding, and the many other uses for agricultural aircraft, aviators are able to increase yield and solve a lot of problems in the industry as a whole. I hope you've learned something new in this, the second episode of A Day in Agriculture. You can expect the next episode on April 25th and listen on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. To keep up with the latest updates about A Day in Agriculture, I encourage you to follow our Instagram at a.day.in.agriculture. Thank you for listening. Sources used in this episode are as follows. AIN Online. Agricultural Aviation celebrates 100th anniversary. National Agricultural Aviation Association. Industry facts and the industry's history. FAA historian Terry Krause. 100 years of aerial crop dusting. Ohio State University. Last hurrah for Cadalpha hornworms. And finally, the Smithsonian Institution, Agriculture by Air. If you would like to access the transcript of this episode or have any questions, contact a.day.in.agriculture@gmail.com. Thank you for listening again, and you can expect the next episode on April 25th.